welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast with Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Story of the season's first third for Shocker Baseball has been the pitching staff. Its ERA is 4.05, and if it holds in that neighborhood over the rest of the season, it would be the staff's lowest since 2018. We'll discount the abbreviated 2020 season. Most striking about the staff's performance is the strikeout-to-walk ratio. The Shockers enter Tuesday's game at Oral Roberts, number 11 nationally, 3.33 strikeouts for each walk. So to talk about this, we've got pitching coach Mike Pelfrey. Mike, so strikeouts aren't everything. They're not the only way to get people out, but they're really, really helpful, and walks are really bad most of the time. So what's the big picture view? How has this staff improved in this area?
Well, I think that, we always emphasize on the walk side of it, we always emphasize throwing the ball over the plate. You know, we tell our guys here that, you know, if they want to pitch, they will throw the ball over the plate. It's not optional. So the walks have always been a huge emphasis. The strikeouts, we ranked last year one of the highest percentage teams of uses of fastballs, and which was like 64% of the time we threw a fastball last year. We've started to make an adjustment. Last time I checked, I think we were down to 55% of usage of the fastball. So we're almost 50-50. We're close to it. Half the time we're throwing more off-speed pitches. And I think we're finding out that in college baseball, when you command a secondary pitch, you throw a secondary pitch, there's going to be a lot more strikeouts.
So when you say throw the ball over the plate, there are going to be people who say, well, yes, of course, that's what pitchers do, is throw the ball over the plate. Explain that a little more in detail. Why is that sometimes difficult? Why do you really have to emphasize that?
Well, you know, I think kids get caught up in velo. Kids get caught up in, and you know, trying to strike somebody out. You get ahead 0-2, you get ahead 1-2, and next thing you know, it's 3-2 before you know it, you know. Obviously when all these guys will be unbelievable in the bullpen, and they step across the white line, and the extra adrenaline, the extra emotions, you know, it's a learning process on learning how to control those, you know, and then that gets in the way. The next thing you know, you don't throw any strikes. And that still happens every once in a while with these kids. I think they're learning as we go, and you know, if they don't throw the ball to the plate, we're going to take them out. And if, you know, I told them the other day that, you know, the relievers, I was like, you know, when I bring you in the game, you know, it was the 14 inning game. I want you to throw multiple innings, but you have to give me a reason to do that. And 45% strikes or 37% strikes or 50% strikes or multiple walks, that's not a good reason, you know, and you will come out. So that's if we allow them to make it through the inning.
So I've heard kind of a version of this with the Royals a lot with their changeover. And their pitching mantra, I guess, now is throw it down the middle of the plate, because your natural movement will then keep it, you know, on other sides of the plate. And if you try to nibble, if you try to hit the outside, you're going to walk people. Is that similar philosophy to what you're talking about?
Yeah, I don't think we ever – so we have a couple of young guys, Michael Mahal and Nate Snead, that have great stuff. We even did it the other day with Parker Dilhoff. So when he comes in the game, we radio over to the catcher and we tell him to set up right down the middle. You know, knowing that if we can get their direction going towards the middle of the plate, that they're going to have a better chance to be able to throw strikes. And those guys have obviously, you know, had good springs so far and been very, very successful with that approach. You know, obviously as we go on, we might start working more thirds of the plate and stuff like that. But, you know, there's guys on there that we do set up down the middle and let their movement and all the action of the ball and let it take place.
So we mentioned ERA, which is kind of the old established way for people to evaluate pitchers, but it's not the only metric, and we seem to have more and more all the time. What's your favorite statistical way of judging your pitchers?
Well, I think, you know, for me, the bigger thing I pay attention to is WHIP, walks plus hits, you know, innings pitched, and you know, because it's proven that if you have base runners, or if you have a high WHIP, or if you have a WHIP higher than, you know, 1-3, which, you know, I tell them 1-3 or less. If you have a WHIP higher than that, which means, you know, you might have a WHIP at 1.8 and you have a great ERA. But over time, over the season, as it goes on, that's going to even out. You're not going to continue to get out of those innings when you have almost two base runners per inning. You know, they're going to come up and get hits and be able to do those things. So, even if you have a good ERA and the WHIP's really high, it's going to even out by the end of the year.
So the ERA would include a little bit of luck, and the WHIP will tell you over time it's not going to sustain.
Yeah, and that's something that we go through with the fall and the early part of the spring, you know, when we're scrimmaging and stuff. Like, I have the ability to roll an inning. You You know, so a guy might have nobody out and have the bases loaded, but he threw his 20 pitches that inning, and I have to roll the inning. And you know, at the end of the fall, we look at the stats, or the early part of the spring, we look at their stats, and they have zero ERA. Well, no, that's not telling the full truth.
Sure. Let's talk about the weekend rotation, which always seems like a good building block foundation. Clark Candiotti, Peyton Tully, Grant Adler, they've all made 5 starts. They've pitched into the 5th inning or longer in 12 of those 15 starts. So how does their consistency kind of start the story of this staff's success so far this season?
Well, it's huge, obviously. If they give you length, it allows us to be able to line up the bullpen, obviously, a little better, you know. If our starter gives us 2 innings and then you think you count on the bullpen to cover 7, something's going to go wrong. Something's going to go wrong in there because you're not going to expect every guy to be able to come in there and be able to do well. So getting length from starters is always an important part of it, and obviously makes it better, because I tell people this, that if you're in the bullpen, you're in the bullpen for a reason, because you weren't able to start. You know, your stuff's not as good. You're not as consistent. There's a reason that you are in the bullpen. So, obviously, like I said, getting length from those guys, and those guys have been awesome, makes us a lot better pitching staff.
So the weather's getting better. Shockers are going to have home games. They've got a home series this weekend. People are going to get out to see these guys. Give us a quick starting report on those 3 weekend starters and what fans might see when they come out to X Stadium.
Well, Clark Candiotti on Friday is he's like one of the ultimate competitors. His routine in between starts is incredible. He has this laser focus, but he wants to get after it and he wants to compete. And his fastball is 88 to 92 right now. And I know as it warms up, I expect it to get to the 93, 94, 95 range. But he's going to attack you. He's going to come at you. He's going to use a slider more than probably 50% of the time. Mainly be fastball slider, but he has a changeup that's really good, and he has a curveball too that he mixes in. But he's going to attack you, and he's going to be aggressive, and he's going to throw the ball over the plate. On Peyton Tully, obviously has been incredible, on both sides of the ball. But when he's on the mound, I think this is the thing that, he's 88, 92. And the thing that makes him different than everybody else, like his extension is 7-7. When he releases the ball. So he gets really out there. And they tell you the average extension is like 6 foot. So every foot that you can add on to that is 3 more miles an hour to the hitter.
So, explain that extension. What's that mean?
So extension where you release the baseball out front.
Because he's so tall. He's pretty tall.
He's tall and he kind of jumps off the rubber and he gets this extension and he releases the ball. It's at 7 feet, 7 inches. So it's, 52.5 feet, right? So that reaction time to the hitter, every foot that you shorten it up is 3 more miles an hour on perceived velocity to the hitter. So it's 88, 92, and you're judging that off an average release height of 6 foot, is 7-7, so that's like 4 or 5 miles an hour to the hitter. So his 88, 92 that he's throwing is 93 to 97.
In their eyes.
And to the hitter, just because the reaction time of seeing the ball is shorter. So that makes it different. That makes it tougher. He's you watch him when he throws, the ball jumps on the hitter. It's been pretty impressive.
How do they measure extension? It's got to be a camera video thing.
Yeah. So we have Rapsodo, we have TrackMan, we have all those new high technology stuff that gives us all that information. Be able to tell that, but it is through high def video. Right. So that tells us that. And then, the thing about him, he was a guy last year that threw fastballs 75% of the time. And we go out to a mound visit the other day and in the first inning, he's given up 4 hits and he's given up 2 runs. And, I tell him, I said, dude, you got him in swing mode. That's awesome. But we got to start throwing more off-speed pitches. Right. And this is a guy that's 75-80%. And he ended up at the end of the game throwing 44% fastballs, which I didn't even think that he was – honestly think he was capable of doing that, because that's such a huge, drastic thing. But he had his changeup working, and his slider was working, and that's the one pitch that's really, I think, taking his game to the next level. His slider is went out and got better this summer, and it's been pretty good and been pretty consistent.
So when you say something funny like you've got him in swing mode, that's awesome. Does he get the humor? Does that
light things up? He gets it. I said, hey, dude, this is great. I love quick outs, but we got to start mixing a little better. You know, and then and we talked about, you know, we talked about pitching in more, getting them uncomfortable because they were in there and hacking and they had the good scouting report on this dude's going to throw a ton of heaters. And they were doing that. And so we adjusted off that. And then, you know, for the next, well, I guess it would have been 6 1/3 innings after that because there was 2 outs in the first at the time. He gave up 1 hit.
And this is Sunday against Creighton.
It's Sunday against Creighton, you know, and he was, but he was, credit to Peyton Tolley, he was able to make that adjustment, which is pretty cool, and obviously be able to execute pitches after that. And then Grant Adler on Sunday, he's been pretty fun to be able to work with, you know, and he's a little bit different, you know. There's times when he throws and he doesn't want to throw a bullpen in between starts. I'm like, well, I've never done that with anybody before, but I'm willing, if that's what you want to do, and that's what he did at junior college. Hey, we can do that, you know, we can make that adjustment. But you know, he is anywhere from 87 to, you know, he was up to 91 last night. But he literally throws probably 15 to 20 fastballs a game, tops. And he has a cutter that's great with a really high spin rate. He has a slider that we've got at over 3,200. He has a curveball that's 2,800, 2,900. And he's got a changeup too. So it's incredible on the amount of his command and being able to command all these pitches and as sharp as they are too as well. He's been pretty good. And you know, the thing about him is he wants to be out there and he doesn't want to come out of the game either. Which just goes true for all three of those guys, you know.
Explain the 3,200 and 2,800 for people who might not be familiar with the spin rate, I guess.
That's the spin rate, yeah. It's the RPMs of the ball when to release it. And obviously the higher the spin rate, the sharper something is, or the better it is, you know. And being at 3,200 on his, you know, over 3,200 on a slider, he would have a top 10 slider in the big leagues. So the guy's been, like I said, he's got all the stuff to be good and have a chance to go on and play at the next level and do all those things. And, you know, but his command of, you know, 5-6 pitches has been pretty impressive.
Why doesn't he want to throw bullpens in between starts?
I don't know. He just always says, I'm always really sore afterwards and I prefer not to just do something really light. And I'm like, but I'll work with you if that's what you've done in the past and it's worked for you and do all those things. But that's a little bit different routine than what I'm used to. But I try to work off them and try to accommodate them. And, you know, I ask him every week, hey, man, you want to throw a pin? You know, he's going to come back on. He threw on Tuesday because we only played 2 games against Creighton. So he'll throw again Sunday. And so I've asked him, you know, you want to throw a pin this week? And just kind of like, I'm like, I'm going to work off you. So you just let me know where you're at. He's like, I'll be fine.
So he is the one, I think someone tipped me off, and then I watched the next game. He doesn't sit down a lot during games, whether he's pitching or not, right? He's very active and energetic. I noticed him middle of the game, and he was just kind of walking around in the bullpen.
Yeah, so he does not stop. And I actually joked around with him early on because he would go down the bullpen and throw in between every inning. And I'm like, dude, this isn't junior college, man. What are you doing? You know, and he laughs about it. He's like, dude, that's what I've always done. I cannot sit still. I'm ready to go, and I want to keep moving. And so that's been a little bit different too. You know, like the other day, like I first inning, I came over and I talked to him in the dugout. Next inning, I was searching around for him. I found him in the locker room. The next inning, I was just searching around again. I found him in the bullpen area. And I'm like, dude. He's like, I'm sorry, dude. I can't. But I'm used to it now, and that's his routine. And obviously, he's been pretty dang good for us. So we'll make that adjustment.
He has been. Grant Adler from Derby. Tolley off to a great start, as you mentioned, pitching and hitting. He's 4-0. He's got a 3.00 ERA. He's hitting .380 with 3 home runs, 4 doubles. How's he handling those demands of doing both?
You know, well, last year, that's obviously we're asking a lot of him with the workload amount. And last year, the kind of plan was we let him hit, but we never let him hit when he pitched. And that was kind of the normal progression. Okay, we're going to get him through his freshman year of a normal workload season, you know, and try to do the hitting and the pitching, but just not on the same day. And then going into it, you know, we still were a little bit – skeptical, you know, but that was kind of the plan going in that, okay, we're going to let him hit too, you know, and I think he's even come around and says, I love hitting when I'm pitching. Like, it's like back, makes me feel like I'm in Little League again, you know. And I know the numbers he's putting up when he pitches is like Little League too. I think he might be hitting like close to 700 or something. So it's been pretty impressive, but he's obviously a big bodied kid. He's 6'6" and he's 250 pounds. And, you know, if anybody can withstand the workload of that and be able to hold up, it should be him.
So you've got three relievers with saves, Jace Minor, Robert Krantz, and Nate Snead, and I think they're all like multi-inning saves. Caden Favors has been a swing guy. He's got two starts, eight relief appearances. What's that tell us about the versatility in your bullpen?
Well, a lot of we don't really necessarily have a, as that says right there, we don't really necessarily have a set closer, you know. But, you know, we bring guys in and give them, you know, if they're on, we're going to keep running them out there. You know, if they're feeling it, if they're in a groove, if they're pitching well, we're going to keep running them out there. And we obviously, like you said, a couple of those guys are multiple inning saves and, you know, have taken advantage of the opportunities, and they were out there and they were throwing well. And we let them finish the game, eat the rest of the game. So, but yeah, the versatility, we have some guys in the bullpen that, you know, you really every year, I think you want to get to about 8 to 10 guys that you can count on, that you can fully trust, that will throw most of the innings. And I think their guys are starting to separate themselves and be able to do that. And then we have our guys that we can count on and we'll be able to do that. And guys that are having really good years that, you know, if the game's close and the game's tight and this and that, we have guys that we can go to that we feel comfortable about towards the back end of the bullpen. And it's beyond those guys as well.
So Robert Krantz, a sophomore, last year he threw 14 and a third innings, 9 strikeouts, 7 walks. He's already at 9 and a third this season, 14 strikeouts and 2 walks. What's changed for Robert?
Well, I think I've talked to him about this too, and I think last year too, his mindset as a freshman, it was pretty quick for him. You know, he would come in the game, the game would go faster than. And he did. It was fast on him, and he didn't know how to necessarily be able to slow it down. You know, he went out this summer and he pitched for the Santa Barbara Foresters, and that's obviously a great summer organization, and had a good time and learned, and was around a lot of other really, really good players. You know, I think they ended up winning the NBC tournament again for the third, fourth year in a row. But going through that, doing that, you know, when he came back in the fall, I you could see it right away. Okay, this guy's different. And I'm talking about different in the heartbeat, which we talked about a little bit earlier. You know, we step across the white lines, it's different, you know. And part of the process is you have to learn to control your emotions. You have to be able to control your feelings, be able to control all those things. And he has done a better job of that. And, you know, I think it's just a maturing process that he's going through. And, so, you know, he had the same stuff that he had last year. Stuff was plenty good enough last year. He just did not know that yet. Right, he did not recognize that, and the game was a little bit fast for him, but it's kind of slowed down for him and allowed him to. And you guys see the difference now.
So Saturday in the opener against Creighton, a frustrating loss for the Shockers, but you got to see some depth and some youth on the staff. The Shockers struck out 20 in that 14-inning game, and then you had freshmen Michael Mulholland, Nate Snead, and Parker Dillhoff. They each threw an inning. None of them gave up a hit or a run through the 11th, 12th, and 13th to keep that tied. What growth are you seeing from your freshmen?
Well, you know, same type of thing. The more I think they get out there, the more they get to experience, the more comfortable they get, right? And all three of those guys have the stuff to help, have the stuff to be able to contribute, you know. And there's always a process that when you leave high school or you come here from a junior college, that you have to know that you belong. Right. And you have to get over that, hey, I don't need to be better. I can do what I did in high school and it's still going to work, you know. But they're starting to realize that, hey, they're good enough and they should be a big part of this and be able to go out there and be able to contribute. But like I said, it takes time. So we'll continue to run those guys out because the stuff is there. They've shown the ability to be able to, you know, throw the ball to the plate and be able to compete and be able to get people out. So I think the more that we run them out there, the better and better they will continue to get. But it wasn't like that in the fall, you know. Nate Snead had a pretty rough fall. Michael Mulholland kind of got hurt after in the fall, and then he came back in the later part of the spring, and it was not good at all by any means. You know, had a double digit ERA, but he's starting to learn that, hey, I'm good enough to do this. You know, and he comes in and he attacks and he's aggressive and he's really, really successful. You know, the one thing I was disappointed in on Saturday with those guys, which I brought up earlier too, you know, I bring a Michael Mulholland in, I bring a Nate Snead in, I bring a Parker Dillhoff in. I want those guys to throw multiple innings. But those guys did not give me a reason to run them back out for the second inning. You know, Nate Snead threw 21 pitches and he threw 7 strikes or something like that. Well, that isn't, I think that the strike percentage is like 37% or something. Well, I'm not running you back out after that. I wanted to, right? But you didn't give me a reason to be able to do that. Parker Dillhoff threw 12 pitches and he threw 6 strikes, 50%. I'm not running you back out there, you know, because I'm asking for trouble, you know? So that's the thing that, you know, not only them, the other older guys too, you know, I think we used 10 guys in the game and Creighton used 5 or 6, you know, five relievers, and they used 6 total guys with their starter. So that was the difference really in the game. You know, they got to our 9th and 10th guys, and you know, if guys would have come in and eaten multiple innings, this, you know, I think we would have won on Saturday.
So when I got here, Brock Rodden was in here doing some, I assume, looking at hitting stuff, and I kicked him out and I asked him if there were any questions he wanted me to ask you. He wanted to know who your favorite position player is on the Shocker roster.
I'm always biased to the catcher, right? So that's my guy. That's the guy that I have to work with every day. I have to communicate with, be able to do those things. So Mauricio is my favorite, but then Brock Rodden is right there as well.
And that's a great way, because I wanted to ask about Mauricio. You've got a new catcher. What's his role in this good performance by the pitching?
Well, I think it's everything, you know, because those, you know, and being a new guy here, you have to earn the trust of the pitchers, right? You can't come in and just demand it, right? You're going to have to earn it. And he's done a good job of getting to know these guys. He's done a good job of, you know, catching, you know, building that trust, learning how to communicate with those guys. And you know, we have this something called True Media, you know, that ranks every catcher in the country that's caught. And it kind of tells you, okay, pitch framing, your guy is this. And it gives you a rank 1 to, you know, last year there was like 650 people total that caught in a Division I game. You know, and you know, so along those same lines now, Mauricio's like 17th in the country. And that's in terms of getting strikes called strikes and getting balls called strikes. So he's been awesome. He's been really, really good. And the other thing that I'm, you know, we go over scouting reports and we do all those things, and I can, you know, I can use Utah Tech. We get our butt kicked on Wednesday at Utah Tech, okay? So I go back and get all the analytics stuff, go over the videos, do all those things. I'm like, okay, and I'm changing the game plan. We're doing a 180 on the game plan. So we're in the hotel before we leave to go to the park, and you know, I tell Mauricio, I said, I need you to come meet with me. I need you to come sit down with me. And we start going over the lineup, and pretty much everything that I had written down that I wanted to change and wanted to start to do, he already had it. He already knew it. Like, and so his knowledge of the game, his understanding of the game, his ability to be able to make adjustments and be able to, like, okay, well, I recognize this, I saw this, and we changed the total game plan from what we had going into game 1. And I think, you know, I think we gave up maybe less runs than we did in the first game in the next 3, you know, and we won all 3 of the next games. But that's something that's been pretty dang fun to be able to work with and be able to do that. And like I said, his understanding of the game and all that stuff is pretty helpful in helping, being able to help these guys.
Who's the best pitch framer you played with?
I always tell people the greatest catcher that I ever threw to was Henry Blanco. And I played with him. I threw to him in New York. But his ability to, you know, you throw the ball 3 inches out and he was quiet and he didn't move. He wasn't like real jarry. He was just quiet and quick to the ball and beat the ball to the spot and presented it. And I'm like, this guy's awesome. This guy's pretty good. But yeah.
How much of a difference can that make? I mean, are we talking 3 outs a game or does it make a dramatic difference?
So, you know, we get the stats back in that 14 inning game against Creighton on Saturday, okay? Mauricio stole 26 pitches. So there was 26 pitches that were out of the zone that he got called for strikes. So we threw 161 strikes that day, and that's 26. So it ended up being 16% of all of our strikes were from Mauricio framing the ball and moving it up and presenting the baseball to the umpire, and the umpire giving us the call, which is pretty incredible. I don't know if there's another game in the country where guys had 26 of those before. So that's it was pretty impressive and you know, pretty dang good on his part. So he's been a huge part of being able to help the pitching staff as well.
So how much of being a great catcher is learned through experience, and how much of it is they just kind of have that innate sense of how to do these things?
I think experience is huge. You know, obviously the more you do it, the more comfortable you are, the more you see stuff, more you see swings, you see hitters, reactions, those kind of type of things. You see foul balls, all those things. It gives you information, you know, and I think you have to be back there and have the experience to be able to recognize it and be able to understand it, and then be able to process what it tells you, you know, and then be able to apply it, you know. And that's where I think he's, like I said, he's pretty dang good in that area, and it's like I said, it's fun to work with from my side of it.
Just to catch people up, we had a couple inside baseball things. So Brock Rodden is the second baseman for the Shockers, and Mike Pelfrey, who we're talking to, of course, pitched for the Shockers, pitched in the big leagues, Mets, Twins, White Sox? White Sox Tigers. So, yes, you have that baseball background. You're now in your fifth year of coaching pitchers here at Wichita State. Take us through that journey. What have you learned? What have maybe you changed? What have you adapted over your time?
Well, I've had to change a lot because obviously, you know, I tell people that towards the end of my career, I was kind of like a mentor for the younger guys, you know, but I still had to take care of myself first, right? Make sure that I was still being able to do my job, still getting out, to be able to do those things, and then be able to help guys on the side. Coaching is different. You know, I have 18 pitchers. I have 18 different personalities that I have to deal with, you know, and you know, you try to figure out what makes each guy click. How to get each guy kind of going, trying to get them in the right direction. You know, how to communicate with each guy, and that's kind of been, I think, the biggest maybe adjustment, because I in the beginning, I've always come in and I've always been kind of one way, like, and that one way is kind of intense, and you know, I'll get in your face, I'll get on you, rip your butt if I have to, you know, to get what I want. Well, I've found out that doesn't work. That doesn't always work. There's guys that I can get on and I can push and I can tell them, you know, that's not right and this needs to happen and this you need to change now. You need to do this and they'll respond. Other guys I do that and they go the opposite direction. You know, so that's the hardest part. So I would tell people that I've gotten pretty soft now, which was total opposite of my personality of who I am. Because I've always been intense, but I've gotten soft, and you know, when guy doesn't pitch well, you know, I'd want to get in their face and, you know, get on them and call them out and tell them they need to be better, and then it didn't work, you know, and we found that out pretty quick. So now I don't necessarily do that. Do I still challenge them? Yes. Do I still, you know, when they don't do something well as a group, do I bring it up? Yes, I do. I don't let it go. Well, this is what we need to do better. This is what we did yesterday. This does not work, and I bring it up, and I'm stern about it, you know. But I've become pretty soft now.
I'm not sure, right? That's soft as much as it is different people process information in different ways, and you're smart to vary your approach.
Here's the way I think that this is the way I viewed it. Kids now are different, you know, because Brent Kimnitz could go out there and just rip your butt, and you would respond, you know, it would be fine. Well, it doesn't work anymore. So either, you know, in all reality, I look at it like, hey, I can change, or I have to get out, because it's not going to work if I don't change. You know, so I learned that, and I've tried to adjust, and I've tried to be better about that and communicating and doing it the right way. You know, but I still get mad every once in a while. I still call them out. You know, but it's not as often. I tell you that.
Right. And obviously, you're working with them, but I would also. I mean, I've done stories on Jim Newland from the 89 team, and they really had to constantly prop him up, tell him how good he was. So I think even back then, I think Brent would say you had different approaches with different guys.
Yeah, Brent, I talked to Brent about that too, you know, about getting advice and doing those things, and he said building relationships. That's what it's about, man. You have to build relationships. You have to figure out each guy. You have to figure out what makes them click in each guy. And, you know, like I said, and before I was just one way. I was going to get in your face, and I was going to call you out, and I was going to challenge you. And that for most kids, that does not work, you know, and I probably learned that the hard way.
Okay, Mike has a game to prepare for. We are recording this on Wednesday morning before the Shockers play Oklahoma State Wednesday night at X Stadium. The Shockers have UMass in town starting Friday for a three-game series. Noon at X Stadium, and then look ahead a little bit. On Tuesday, Oklahoma comes to town for the annual game downtown at Riverfront Stadium. Mike, thanks for your time.
Appreciate it, Paul. Take care.
Hi, this is Rick Miuma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We encourage you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com.
It's over! It is over! Ladies and gentlemen, say it slowly and savor it. Wichita State is going to the Final Four for the first time in 48 years.
Unbelievable. What a scene, folks. The Shocker fans are just going crazy in the stands.
Just maybe the greatest win in the history of Wichita State basketball.